4 days done and dusted into the so far 21-day lockdown. To all intents and purposes, you've made it through 4 days, and well done. Okay, another 17 to go. And it's going to be tough, but not only for you and for people living in far worse conditions than you might be living in, but warnings over the weekend from the BUSA Deputy President, Business Unity South Africa Deputy President Martin Kingston, that economic shutdown is going to precipitate a deep structural depression over an extended period of time. Clarity, please. Martin Kingston, Vice President at Business Unity South Africa. Just how bad are things from your perspective?
I think things are very bad, Bruce. They're bad both from a societal point of view, but also obviously from an economic point of view. If we look at the humanitarian challenges in the healthcare, or provision of healthcare to those who are the most vulnerable in society, they are now in a crisis. As you just said, we've now found a COVID positive case in Alexandria. It was just a matter of time. We're particularly concerned about the townships and the informal settlements, and the stress it's going to place on the healthcare system, and the need, therefore, to contain movement and to observe social distancing. And the more we do that, the more hopeful we are that we'll come out of this as quickly as possible. The reality is that we were already in a recession. That was before COVID-19 descended on South Africa, not just the domestic impact, but obviously against an appalling global background where there's catastrophic ramifications for Africa and potentially for South Africa. And we've doubled down in the context of the downgrade. Many of us anticipated it. But the outlook in the immediate short term is extremely bleak. And now we've got to talk about mitigation strategies so that we can rebuild our economy after we've actually dealt with the immediate challenges of the crisis. And that rebuild is going to take a long time. So certainly we anticipate that it's not going to be a recession. It's going to be a fundamental depression. We're going to have a step down in the level of economic activity, obviously exacerbated by the lockdown, which is a necessary step. And it's going to take time to recover. And in doing so, we're going to have to be prepared to be much more flexible about the structural reform that we implement and the speed and agility with which we do so.
Explain to me the difference between a recession, a depression, and what you call a fundamental depression.
Well, I believe that we're now looking at negative growth. Certainly, we're working on the numbers, Bruce, for the balance of this year. We don't think it's going to be 2 or 3%. It'll be much more fundamental than that. Could extend indeed into next year. Many people, unfortunately, losing their jobs, some of them probably already as businesses begin to shutter. So we see a step down in the level of economic activity. We see, as I said, a large number of incremental unemployed people joining the ranks of those who are already unemployed. And we're going to have to gird our loins in a much more fundamental way than we thought before in terms of where our priorities lie. So what we see is not necessarily a U-shaped recovery or even a V-shaped recovery, but probably much more of an L-shaped recovery. In other words, over an extended period of time to begin to get back onto an economic trajectory which sees real positive, sustainable growth in the system. And that's going to take an extended period of time.
Martin Kingston, the Vice President of Business Unity South Africa, thank you. Gulam Belim is the Group Chief Economist at Standard Bank. Can you be any less pessimistic about the state of our economy, Gulam, because it does feel like we're headed into a very deep trough?
Bruce, while Martin is girding his loins and drawing on the alphabet soup of descriptions, let me cling to some of his notions. And I think what it will look like, and not to be creative unnecessarily, but I think we are on course for a Nike swoosh path of economic performance. In other words, a very substantial and immediate plunge in economic output, in income generation, and also in wealth destruction. But with relative brevity, the economy will bottom and then in a grinding way begin to recover. So maybe it has some makings of an L-shaped profile and maybe some makings of a U-shaped profile. But I guess, resonance with Martin's remarks, this is unprecedented. We know, for instance, that the global financial crisis of 2008 and 2009 was twice the damage of the garden variety recession over the previous 30 or 40 years, and this will surpass even the GFC.
This, however, provides an opportunity, and a rare opportunity, for the last, 8 years, maybe longer. South Africa has been warned that it earns too little and spends too much, and it needs to either find ways to liberate the economy to grow more so that we can justify the way we spend money. We've also seen wholesale plunder of the economy. That much is very, very clear. But we've been caught up in political infighting, in political posturing, in political jockeying for so much of the last 2 years when we should have been doing a really deep repair job on the economy. And we've seen many signals over the last year or two where, oh, this is a critical inflection point. This is an opportunity for Cyril Ramaphosa to stamp his authority, for Tito Mboweni to take the reins. But surely this is that opportunity.
Indeed, and I think the president has already signaled that he crossed the nettle. So I would, and as you will well know, suggest that South Africa's rebuilding, reset, recalibration episode really has two installments to it. The one, largely institutional reform, and I think we've seen an enormous amount of milestones over the last 2 years. But your sights are more set on macroeconomic reforms. Quite clearly. And in this respect, there, the president seemingly has been far more guarded. And there has been seemingly holy cows that will remain exactly that, untouchable. But I think given the substantial GDP shock, the ensuing revenue and broader fiscal pressures that will unfold, and the need, quite simply, for collective sacrifice, I think the ensuing days and weeks, we are going to talk about salary sacrifices amongst a broad swathe of white-collar workers, for instance. The public sector just simply cannot be clinging to the type of contractual agreements in terms of wage settlements that they've been familiar with. I think the president is going to put his boot on the necks of public sector officials who are pedestrian, for example, in bringing broader spectrum to bear. So you could argue that the president has probably been unleashed as a function out of sheer necessity. And over the weekend, just very quickly, the anecdote that we draw where seemingly the finance minister, Minister Mboweni, has signaled the president has given him license to act in the posture that he seemingly is biting at the chomp to get on with.
And, there is no time like the present. If we're to avoid the fundamental depression to which Martin Kingston refers, we've got to take some fairly big and bold steps. Is the sort of action that you're seeing under the Reserve Bank, the dropping of reserve requirements on banks, for example, to help them free up cash to lend into the economy, to provide the flexibility that their customers are going to need in terms of payment holidays, that sort of stuff, the sort of thing that we should be doing? Are we on the right track?
So there's two dimensions to this, at least. One is that policymakers are drawing on the playbook of 2008 and 2009. And for instance, in the United States, you've seen the Fed act in just a few weeks with a vast and raft of measures that it took many months to unleash in 2009. So the historical playbook is being brought to bear. And similarly with the South African Reserve Bank and broader conduct authorities, the South African financial system is so much more fortified since 10 years ago, as it is around the world, precisely because we could not find ourselves again in a situation where banks were fragile. And the responsiveness of the authorities to underpin and maximize an attempted stabilization is at the forefront. A 1 percentage point cut certainly was meaningful as an early foray, but we'll see more of it. And also non-interest rate but liquidity-enhancing measures continue to be enacted by the Reserve Bank to, in other words, make it easier for banks to draw on available liquidity and to find comfort in their available capital requirements.
My thanks to Gula Belim this evening. He is the group economist at Standard Bank and group chief economist at Standard Bank. Also to the vice president at Business Unity South Africa, Martin Kingston. Listening to all of that, John Kenz, the global market strategist at Rand Merchant Bank. And what we've seen since Friday's announcement by Moody's that they are finally putting us into sub-investment grade, into so-called junk status. We've seen the Rand retreat to its lowest levels ever against the dollar and the euro. John Cairns, expected, I suppose, uncomfortable nevertheless.
Yes, Bruce, exactly. But, you know, local market reactions haven't been that bad, all things considered. The Rand, in fact, was only the fourth worst performing currency today. So you would have thought with a downgrade we'd be a massive underperformer. But in fact, no, three other currencies doing much worse than us. So really, the fallout hasn't been as bad in the Rand and even in the bonds. The bond market opened extremely weak, but then fought its way back. And from what we're hearing from our trading desk, we're not seeing a lot of aggressive selling by foreigners at all. Partly that's because we haven't fallen out of the Wigby. But overall, I think, as you mentioned, well anticipated, the market's priced it in.
Now, we have gone from 13-something to 18-something this year. That may account for some of the calm, the relative calm, in currency markets.
Yes, Bruce. And also last week in particular, we saw some Rand underperformance. So it was clear people were putting on some trades, buying the rumor, and then today you sell the fact, you unwind your position. So the Rand opens up at 18.06 and then fights its way back to the 17-80 levels. But you did mention 13 to 18, just a scary stat to be aware of, relative to previous Rand blasts, so 2001, 2008, and even 2016, the Rand hasn't actually moved all that much. So certainly it's not really repeating the worst of its performance that we've seen in the past.
That's the optimist view, John. I like your optimistic view on that one. The reality is, though, that a lot of these bond funds that have been invested in South African bonds because they've been obliged to do so because of our inclusion in bond indices by virtue of the fact that we have been investment grade for nearly 30 years, they have to sell by the end of April. Does this not lead to an acceleration in sales of bonds, which then weakens the currency market further?
Possibly. So if we just split that foreign investor base into two groups, the active funds, in other words, the pension funds, etc., who say, yeah, we want to follow the Wigby, but we don't have to be tracking it exactly. So if they haven't lightened up their positions already, they've now got an opportunity to do so after the downgrade, right? Another incentive to do so. Then there's the passive funds, the ones who must track the index. Now, it's a little bit technical there. Because of the crisis and the volatility, the index provider, the FTSE Russell index provider, has said that they will not be rebalancing their funds on the 1st of April. So we are not falling out of the Wigby bond index at this stage. FTSE says, okay, if things calm down, then the normal rebalancing will happen on the 1st of May. And if that's the case, then passive funds will have to lighten up then. But it's quite possible that with all the market turmoil, they could delay that again. So it might only be in June that these passive funds have to start lightening up their positions.
So we've got a little bit of room to move. We always have a bit of room to move. But at what point do we become attractive from a junk bond perspective? Because at some point, the yields on our bonds, the amount of money we have to pay to people to risk lending to us, becomes so sexy and so attractive that people are willing to take risk on us.
So I think we are already certainly at that position. The Rand valuation is very attractive for a foreign investor. You come in with a weak Rand, you can get some capital gains because of the Rand movements. Bond yields are extremely attractive by long-term historical levels comparison. But why aren't investors coming in? Why aren't local investors buying the bonds? It's because everyone has been caught by the crisis, is still having to lighten up their asset positions to get hold of cash. So that buying has not been forthcoming yet. Now, saying that, in the past 3 days, we're seeing that those conditions are churning. The global dollar liquidity shortage is easing. We've seen foreigners nibbling in our domestic bond market. So maybe the conditions are turning now and we can start to see some relief coming through in both the bonds and the rand.
John Cairns, thank you very much. He's the global market strategist at Rand Merchant Bank.